And welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
How do you feel 2 weeks off?
Oh my lord, it is warm, and I do not like warm.
This is true. It is balmy out there.
So I mostly stayed home watching videos on my phone because it was the only way I could curl up next to my fan and still do something. I could have read a book. I should have read a book while curled up next to my fan.
Instead, you were like playing games on your phone, I bet. Watching YouTube videos.
I re-downloaded Robot Unicorn Attack.
Oh my god, of course you would.
I am unashamed of my love of that game. It has that inspiring music that makes me believe in tomorrow.
Well, there have been so many things have happened that we've not talked about, and there's a lot that's been happening. So I want to start off with some various stories that happened over the last week.
Okay.
Canadian stories. So much happening in Canada right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yes.
Where does one begin? Well, we're going to start with the Conservative Party of Canada.
Yeah.
The Federal Conservative Party.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't often find myself... I mean, they haven't often given me reason to go, good on ya.
Historically, being a conservative wasn't a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got in bed with the conservative religious right, and then they started getting into...
Yeah, it moved from sort of fiscal conservatism to more social conservatism. Well, anyway, now the conservatives are
Martin Luther King Jr. was a card-carrying Republican. I don't know if you knew that.
The more you know.
Like, this is how far we've come. So it's... Yeah, when you see stories like the one we're about to tell when I stop interrupting you, it'll be like, oh, that's what the old conservatives looked like.
So the story that I'm hoping to finish here is that the Conservative Party at the federal level is actually pushing the Liberal Party,
right,
the government party,
yeah,
to actually make permanent the LGBT refugee funding program.
Yeah.
So we've talked when we did our Refugee Month 2 years ago, mm-hmm, and I think we've replayed that episode once as well. Canada is amongst the best countries in the world in terms of how well it's doing at not only integrating refugees, but also the fact that it continues to take folks in.
Yeah.
And the key to that success isn't that the government is literally just, you know, rounding up homos in Kenya, sticking them on the plane and dropping them off in Kingston, Ontario. That's not how it works. I mean, in some cases, they are government-sponsored refugees.
Yeah.
But a lot of the cases, and I think this is the program that's being supported here, is it is often, you know, 5 to 12. I think there's a specific number of people you need. I forget the details.
Okay.
But folks who come together and sort of co-sign as like the legal guardians for a little while. And,
you know, they... sponsors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they raise money. They get the pots and pans. Mm-hmm. They get the bus pass. You know, they check in on them. They tell them when swimming classes are. And just, you know, the minutiae of daily life that really integrates people in.
Yeah.
And we've interviewed folks who brought in lesbians from Thailand,
mm-hmm,
who, you know, you wouldn't think that was a thing, but they were fleeing from corrective rape.
Mm-hmm.
Gay men from Kenya, folks out of the Middle East with all the war zones happening there. There are refugee camps inside of refugee camps, because it's so dangerous to be an LGBT refugee, that you need to be protected even within that space.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada does an amazing job compared to everybody else.
Well, I mean, certainly now. So we used to do the same thing that a lot of other people do. So like the Jane Finch Corridor was when we took in a lot of people, more people than Toronto could absorb, and be like, okay, everyone, you go to this one spot. We're not going to give you any parks or social services or community centers, just a whole bunch of apartment buildings. Okay, cram in there. Go for it. So that's sort of the problem with, I think it's North London? One of the neighborhoods in London. They're just building towers and cramming people in there with like no schools.
UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's been an issue in the UK for a long time.
And they're like, hold on, could you at least put, like, a park bench in front of one of these buildings you're trying to cram everyone into? Like, could we do that? So, yeah, the issue isn't, because, like, bringing in refugees is always a good thing, so long as you bring them in a way that's helpful for their lives, and this program is exactly that. Like, you want to, you know, not out of the frying pan into the fire, but, you know, out of the frying pan into the silver serving tray. I don't know how to continue the metaphor, but no fire. That's the point, that, you know, you escape the bad place. You don't get crammed into a less bad place, but still, you know, bed bugs, crammed building. Yeah, look at the history of Jane Finch. It's not great. It's not great. So, good intentions, not great. This is great. This program is great.
Sadly, her push, what the argument was is to tie, or maybe that they should tie a certain percentage of refugees who are brought in through the LGBT program, because Canada is doing such a great job of integrating international LGBT folks into Canada, and Canada has an amazing reputation, and, you know, we should be sustaining that.
Yeah.
The motion didn't pass. Oh. So it was a bit sad.
Was this a private member's bill or a party bill?
It was a motion, so sort of a... it's non-binding.
It's not
but
in a bill.
It didn't even pass either way. So, but the immigration minister, Ahmed Hussein, announced that there is a round of 50,000 a year for Rainbow Refugee Assistant Pilot Project for the next 2 years. That realistically is not very much money at all.
That's like, what, four people, I think, that it'll help?
Yeah. It is not great news.
Yeah.
But what's important here is that the Conservatives are right on board.
Or at least a Conservative.
Yeah. Well, I think there was party support.
Oh, okay, good, yeah, good.
So it was, very encouraging. And what this means to, you know, LGBT folks who are conservative is like, we're not just the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not all Doug Ford. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's very encouraging, I think.
I mean, it is a traditional conservative value of, you know, do it right or go home. And that's definitely what this is. Like, guys, we're doing it right. Let's do it right, but more of that.
Well, like, it's like, yes, let's bring in LGBT refugees, but let's tie it to reasonable goals. Like, it is, you know, it's like, you know, let's have reasonable volumes of refugees, and a proportion of them should definitely be LGBT. So it's like, there's still that immigration angle going on, which I thought was quite entertaining.
Yeah.
Now, further Canadian news, and I was actually quite happy with this, because I think this has been a bit of a lightning rod debate, and I'm not sure where you stand on it. As a gay man, I think maybe our biases are as obvious as the rainbow flag.
Oh, yes, yes.
So the Canada Supreme Court has made a decision regarding the school at Trinity Western University in British Columbia. So Trinity Western University, their law school, they, in order to graduate, I believe they were requiring students to sign a pledge to abstain from sexual intimacy that violates the sacredness of marriage between a man and a woman, effectively banning gay students.
Can a university even do that in Canada?
It's a religious university. So this was the challenge. And the reason why this all came about is because other provinces were like, no.
If it were a seminary, I could maybe see that. If it were a seminary for a variety of Catholicism that enforced this. But, like, this is a law school. Like,
That's
a human rights violation.
So the way it works is the law school would apply to bar societies to be accredited. So you sometimes get lawyers who are accredited who have attained the bar in just one province, or if they're at certain universities, they have they work with the societies in multiple provinces.
Okay.
So anyway, this university with the don't be gay rule applied to be for their students to have the bar in all of the provinces and all the territories. Well, Ontario said no.
Yeah.
BC, which is where it is, the BC Law Society said no.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nova Scotia said no, which means that any law students that graduate won't become lawyers.
Yeah.
Because the law societies do not accredit that school.
I mean,
so the No Say Gay, the Don't Be Gay school, Trinity Western, took them to court, arguing that it was a religious freedom.
Well, I mean,
and they lost.
You could also, you know, be straight and have sex at all. because that's outside of marriage as well. I mean, it definitely kicks out the gays, for sure. But yeah, no, it's just, that is, I believe the classic term is illiberal. It is very illiberal of them. They're basically telling people that you do not have the right to make your own choices on your own free time, which is
so
not really the spirit of Canadian society.
Trinity Western was arguing that by saying, no, we want to credit your students because of your putting this don't be gay rule in was infringing their religious liberty.
Infringing your religious liberty would be the individual students choosing to do that on their own free will as an expression of their religion. Other people telling you, you must do this as an expression of my religion, is not freedom of religion.
Well, the Supreme Court certainly came to some decision on that. What they said was that the law societies have an overarching interest to protect the values of equality and human rights that it carries out, which means that the values of equality and human rights that the law society has applies to all its members. And you can't have members who don't buy into that.
Yes.
And that's why these law societies said no.
Yeah.
You know, we want to credit them. We don't know what Trinity Western is going to do next. It says it's disappointed with this decision. But let us know what you think, listeners. You know, should these law societies take on students who opt to go to a university where they cannot be gay or cannot engage with and promote and so on? It's very,
honestly, though,
guarded language.
Quebec went through the same thing in the 50s and 60s as a part of the early stages of the Quiet Revolution. There's a legal precedent for telling institutions you can't tell people what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy into it voluntarily, long as there's no punitive measures for not buying into it.
You know what I thought was interesting was that Trinity Western, you know, lost the court battles, I think, a couple of the provincial levels.
Yeah.
And just, like, kept pushing it. Like, they wouldn't just not back down, and now they've been shot down by the Supreme Court. And there is no...
You can't
going over that.
Yeah,
no. You've kind of reached the end of your options at that point.
And you know, our current Prime Minister, his dad was a Quiet Revolution superstar. So, I mean, coming back to that, like, you're not going to go above the courts to the PM either.
No.
It's not going to
The only other option would be legislative change. And the legislative change would have to be in keeping with the Charter and the Constitution.
Yeah.
And then the courts even then could rule. It's just not going to change.
It's just not going to happen. And fair enough. I mean, not that we're trying to give them hints. Yeah. But, you know, the point is it's not going to happen there,
BC
buddy.
BC is sort of looking really good right now on LGBT rights.
Yeah.
Now, the city of Vancouver a little while ago, or relatively recently actually, passed a ban on conversion therapy. And this is a conversation that's sort of happening nationwide.
Yeah.
Conversion therapy has been deemed, and we've talked about this before, because in the States, a lot of people are banning it.
Yep.
It's been deemed as torture by certain medical associations.
Yep.
I think it was either World Health Organization or a branch of the UN declared it as a form of torture.
That would be the World Health Organization.
Yeah, that would be the World Health Organization. Sorry, who did the IR degree? I think that was me. it's really coming in handy now. The city of Vancouver is banning it. And the idea is, and this is sort of why the LGBT community is, on the one hand, we want to be like, yes, this is super important.
Yes, this is progress, yes.
This is really important, but we don't have in Canada really what people think of as conversion therapy, which is, you know, the power of Christ compels you, and just like, you know, the actual real torture elements of it.
Yeah.
In fact, the Blue Power Ranger from the original Power Ranger movies, came out and said that he'd gone to conversion therapy and suffered like a major breakdown. And yeah, it was just not good days for this Blue Power Ranger.
No.
And yeah, he blames the conversion therapy because it's all about the language that's being used typically in Canada is, and this is what makes it so difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
The language is often, so you may be gay.
Yeah.
We're not going to cure you.
Yeah.
But we're going to give you tools to navigate the desires, to minimize how it interferes with your daily life. And bring you closer to God. And that all sounds reasonable, doesn't it?
It doesn't necessarily sound bad.
If you believe that, you know, sex outside of marriage is a sin, mm-hmm. and, you know, you may or may not buy into the gay sex being, you know, don't lie with a man as a man lies with a woman. If you're buying into that and that forms part of your beliefs, this all makes a lot of sense. Except it doesn't work.
No.
And that's what we're finding, and this is what a lot of medical associations are saying.
The Leviticus passage is actually probably a reference to body slaves, that you shouldn't own body slaves.
You know, and I think that's the important part. It's framed around coping mechanisms and finding God and bringing gay people closer to the church.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great.
Yeah.
Except it's very, very sneaky. Because a lot of folks who have gone through it are saying, you know, this is still conversion therapy.
It's still conversion therapy. And the problem is, like, the idea of a program whose basic push is, okay, so you may be gay and you appear to be unhappy with it. Let's figure out what to do next. That kind of program needs to exist. But superficially, how that kind of program and how gay conversion therapy will advertise themselves, they'll be very hard to tell apart.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you regulate that kind of thing?
Well, and this is the challenge. You know, the city of Vancouver is banned it.
Yeah.
And it's deemed as harmful by the Canadian Psychological Association, the World Health Organization, the American Psychiatric Association, the American Medical Association. Many people are like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
And it's extremely, it's psychologically damaging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so seductive for folks who are trying to find God, for folks who are, if you're coming out and not having a good experience, often you can look for support in your religion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is almost a cruel way of coming in at them. So Vancouver banned it. The CBC did a great piece on this where they interviewed some advocates who are pushing for this. And what the advocates were saying was that you can ban it, but the way it's defined is so, like, how they're squishy. Selling it changes slightly, you know? Which brings me actually to Nova Scotia, where two LGBT advocate groups were pushing against Seventh-day Adventists, yes. The Maritime Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Okay.
There we go. At a campground in Pugwash, Nova Scotia, which is nice and, you know, urban. They were bringing in Danielle Harrison and Michael Carducci from the Ohio Coming Out Ministries. You can read more about all the stories we're talking about at canqueer.news, where we cite and source everything as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they claim that they're talking about sharing their own stories, about their experiences, how they got closer to God. But the LGBT advocates are saying, you know, this is backdoor gay conversion therapy.
Yeah.
You know, this is saying, you know, they're not talking about engaging with gay people and navigating that. You're not having those conversations. They're having conversations about how suppressing and denying and compartmentalizing and putting it in a little box and throwing away the key.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how doing that as a way of minimizing your experiences and your potential exposure. And that's the unhealthy part.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's been a lot of pushback on this.
Yeah.
But we're seeing, Christian right, sort of folks who have these beliefs, becoming more prominent over the last month or two, over the last 3 weeks. Have you seen any stories that jump out at you?
Well, I mean, no stories in particular, but I mean, as I'm sure you know, I occasionally partake in the deep dark corners of the internet,
and
I chat with people all over the world.
I think you're on several lists as a result of that.
Possibly. And there has been a growing number of people who, it's not so much that they reject their sexuality, it's that they reject the gay community. They look at what's going on in how, especially gay male sexuality, but not exclusively gay male sexuality. I think it's just that the gay men are more vocal about it. That they don't like how gay men treat each other or how lesbians treat each other. They don't like the community. They don't like the sexualization. They don't like the superficial nature of it. And the answer is, well, don't participate in that. You don't need gay conversion therapy. You just need to not go to a gay bar you know, you need to just, I don't know, do your normal thing. But
yeah.
also, at the same time, yeah, no, it's, I think
they're on meetup groups.
Yeah, a lot of them are, yeah. But that option, I think, has... The thing is, it is an option that naturally has no advertising. Like, I've... Actually, no. Wait, I was about to say a lie. I was about to say I've never seen a show where a character... An openly gay character rejects all that, but there actually is one, and that's Please Like Me.
So bad. Now, we'll be back just after a quick music break, where we'll be talking about Pride Parade and an advisory issued by Fierté Canada Pride.
Oh!
Quite a shocking development. More Canadian news, more LGBT news. Now, I want to talk about the rock duo partner. I actually met their agent in Toronto.
Okay.
I was getting a coffee with a friend of mine from an Ottawa radio station, and they met up with him. And partner, we've played them multiple times. We've actually played this song before as well.
Mm.
They just won the English SOCAN Songwriting Prize for their track Play the Field.
What is SOCAN?
SOCAN is the rights organization for musicians. So it's like writers and so on. Anyway, radio stations and stores that play music pay royalties,
yep.
and this is who they pay. SOCAN then gives the money
to the artists.
To the artists, yep. yeah. I think 80% of it is Drake right now, but, you know, the rest of it is evenly spread out between Justin Bieber and Celine Dion.
And Shawn Mendes.
And Shawn Mendes. Yeah. Oh, my God, I am so sorry. I am so sorry to all the Mendes fans out there. I am going to go and cry in a corner whilst you listen to Partners Play the Field. We'll be back just after this.
Thank you.
welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
Wow.
I know. And with us is Owen Wilson. How are you?
I am doing quite well, thank you.
You can only do that one.
Just the wow, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's all you got. So just now we were talking about, the conversion therapy conversation happening all over Canada, the refugee program, just so much going on. And what's really concerning about what's going on is a Pride story, and there's a couple of them I want to talk about, and I'd love your input on the Toronto Pride discussion we're going to have in just a few moments.
Oh, the answer, I don't even know what you're going to ask me. The answer is it's complicated.
Well, you know what's not complicated is that it appears that there are some elements of the religious right targeting rural and small town prides. So the little pride communities that don't have as many resources and as well put together. And you know, we actually talked about this last week when we talked about the difference between like Wolfsville, Nova Scotia, which is like the tiniest place, apparently really pretty in the fall, tree changing, it's a thing.
Yeah.
And like Vancouver, which is like a bajillion people.
Normally we talk about Tweed.
I don't think Tweed has a pride, but Belleville does. And okay. Belleville's actually a really good example. So anyway, small town prides, where it usually is, you know, it's literally maybe 20, 30 people. Yeah. And you walk, you know, the literally three blocks that is the entire main street of your town.
From City Hall to the closest park, picnic table.
Always a park. And yeah. Then you end up in, I'm describing so many prides right now. And you end up in the park and everyone's chilling. You know, there's usually somebody there doing an acoustic set with a guitar.
Yeah,
typically. And a drag queen in midday with all the face makeup melting off their face because it's June.
And there's no shelter. From the sun.
Yeah, that's small town prides.
Yeah.
And what's really great about that, because I did not, that was not selling that at all.
No, it's actually, pleasant than it sounds. Because then you're just sitting there and like somebody's granddad comes up to you and is like, don't forget to drink enough water. You don't want to dehydrate. And then they just hand you a bottle of water. And then you start chatting about local politics. It's, oh, okay. Yeah. And tell me more about how they closed down the cheese mill. Like it's you
know, cheese mill.
What I don't know. Dairy, but you know.
But you know, and it's all about community. And it's about having that sense of belonging in a small town. Yeah. And that's really where it's so vitally important.
Yeah.
In urban city centers, it doesn't, you can throw throw a rock and you'll hit a homo.
Yeah.
Like there is a lot going on. Don't throw rocks at homeless. No. Just going to put that out there.
Unless it's consensual.
Yeah, I mean, that's some weird private kinky play, and there's rules around that, we're not going to get into that right now.
Safe words and contracts, But yeah, go on.
Anyway, that aside, try not to throw rocks. But it's all about, you know, in urban city centers, there are resources available. There's places you can go, communities you can build, meetup groups.
They can have a family picnic vibe, but that's usually sort of a happy, actually, that's usually the Sunday of Pride Week. And then the rest of the week is the protest and the
parade as well. And all that jazz. But what's great is that in these small town communities, you do get that sense of being able to have conversations. Yeah. There isn't a DJ blaring at a bajillion decibels that droning everything out. You know, it's not an alcohol frenzy. And it's a great way of celebrating LGBT folks within the community. And these are the ones being targeted.
I mean, I could tell you why. It's low-hanging fruit. This is one of the things that's been bothering me a lot lately, is it's all about low-hanging fruit. There was a place in town that was plastered. It was a bar that's owned by a Russian man, and somebody put something up there protesting how Russia treats its people. Fine, actually, 100% I support that, but the Russian embassy is down the street. Why didn't they attack that? Because the guy who owns the bar doesn't have men with guns. It's low-hanging fruit. And it's getting frustrating that, like, this, like, if you're going to do this, you know, do this in Toronto, where, first of all, like, it actually has impact, but also, like, don't attack, like, 20 kids and their parents. Like, I mean, that's cheap.
It's pathetic.
Yeah. You know?
It was actually, the first one was in Dunville Haldimand, Norfolk County, Ontario.
Oh, poor Dunville.
I've never even heard of this place. It's so small.
I know people from Dunville. Where is that? Oh, man, it's near Lake Erie, but not on Lake Erie. And, when I lived in Hong Kong, I knew a few people from Dunville. And they just, like, Dunville was the punchline to a lot of jokes. And it was just like, you know, how many people does it take to screw in a light bulb?
The population of Dunville?
No, just Dunville. That was the answer, just Dunville. And it's one of those things where, like, it's not funny and until you hear it 100 times, and then it's a running gag.
Running gag, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, no, Dunville.
And maybe we'll make it happen.
I've been to Dunville as well on my way to somewhere else.
I mean, a lot of these communities are sort of drive-through communities.
Yeah.
Beautiful places. Yeah. Lovely places. We strongly encourage small-town tourism.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's...
Elmer, Ontario is beautiful.
But it wasn't just here. These agitators then moved. They went to Barrie, Ontario. And even after this press release was issued on the 14th, they then went to Hamilton as well.
So it was the same group each time?
They strongly believe so. I mean, they have the same placards. So, you know, it's very much that church that hates the gays. I think they own the WeHateGays.com website or something.
I know to get back at them, somebody made a gay porn based on them.
With their name, yeah. I'm blanking on what they're called.
I know.
Anyway, but they also have these giant... Oh, the Westboro Baptist Church. There we go.
Somebody made a Westboro Baptist theme porn. It probably wasn't hot. It was a protest piece, but I'm into that. Yeah,
but it'll mess up their Google search. But anyway... I bring them up because they often have the giant placards with, like, several verses from the Bible in it. Just, you know, it's very small print, and it's just very difficult.
What's really concerning
is that they apparently targeted one of the event organizers at their home.
Oh, dear.
They've been, according to Fierta Canada Pride, they've been violent.
Oh.
This is within the context of rising levels of hate crimes against the LGBT community across Canada.
Yeah.
So this is really concerning. That a group of coordinated agitators or protesters are targeting these small town communities. And, you know, if they were trying to make a piece, you know, make their opinion heard, and they went to Vancouver, Toronto, even Ottawa, you know, big cities where, I don't know, it's just, I'm not saying that it would be safer. But I think it has such a higher impact in these small communities.
Yeah.
You know, there's less people to clap back.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, the police are sometimes a 2-hour drive away.
Well, I imagine they would be on site of this giant pride parade.
Oh, okay, fair enough, yeah.
You know, these days, half the cops are in the parade. So, yeah. I mean, it's sort of is what it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, this is shocking news.
Because, like, jerks with signs is fairly serious. But jerks with signs who are willing to be violent is very serious. Yeah. So, I mean...
Notice the tone change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because if it was just, like, a bunch of people over there with signs that you could at least try to ignore, that's not ideal. But this is not great at all. Like, this... No, I don't know. I mean... The thing is that small town prides like this is usually going to be the provincial police. They're not going to have their own municipal police usually. It's going to be, you know, the OPP or the QPP, or I think BC has its own provincial police. But small towns and like, actually no, they're stuck to Ontario right now, aren't they? So it'll be OPP. This is an OPP problem.
Yeah.
I hope they're doing well.
There's been some connections drawn to the recent election win of Doug Ford. They're like, oh, you know... Is it a coincidence that, you know, within weeks of him being elected, there's these protesters targeting what looks like primarily Ontario rural and remote communities? And, you know, I don't know.
Maybe
people feel emboldened and have more license now. We saw a similar thing with Trump. After Trump, the Southern Poverty Law Center was I think something like that. I forget the name exactly. But they tracked a massive spike in hate crime.
So I would say the timeline doesn't match up. That these pride events happened before last, what was it, Tuesday, I think, when Ford got voted in. But that probably did double the numbers of people showing up. Like, I have no doubt that it had an impact. The first one, I think, predated it, though. The timeline is not... super clear. What is the recommendation on how to react to it, by the way, if they show up? Because, like, responding to violence with violence, just that...
No, that's not really... I mean, no. A lot of folks...
We don't need a cycle of vendetta. Like, that's the last thing we need.
Absolutely. I mean, really, the response is to respond with love and to counter protest and... to kind of create, often you see people creating human barriers around them so that people can pass by without being hassled and you know, things like that. And what's really great about Fierta Canada Pride and about the Pride community online is that a lot of them are like, okay, you know, where do I need to be so I can help? You know, what little town do I need to drive to?
Yeah.
You know, so I can be an extra voice to help. And this is interesting because, you know, this is a lot of the conversation around Pride as a protest.
Yeah.
You know, we can't rest on our laurels. There's always a chance our rights will be taken away.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's things like these, which is why the gay community is sort of has that trepidation.
Yeah.
You know?
And the thing is that in small towns, having the Pride, even if it is just basically a family picnic, that is the protest.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're protesting against in the small town. Like, you're normalizing it, you're making it a healthy experience, you're bringing people together, and you're living openly. So, I mean, it's a different kind of protest. It's a little bit more low-key, but it still is super important.
Well, in that, like, Lethbridge had a Pride flag raising.
Yeah, here's the picture. Do you think this is everyone who showed up to Pride?
I think that's the town of Lethbridge. That's, there's a great photo that was shared with Fierta Canada Pride about that. And, you know, it's great because within that community, that's extremely symbolic. It's extremely important.
Very important.
You know, it may not be super important to folks in Vancouver or Toronto, Montreal, where, you know, Pride is a week-long thing and Pride is something that you do every day. But in smaller communities where it's about kind of coalescing around, you know, a celebration of joy and happiness. And
the Pride that I had the most fun at was Sarnia Pride.
Sarnia, wow.
Sarnia, I had so much fun there. Partly because I was the guy who was clearly from out of town, and so everyone was super nice to me. And I don't mean like super nice to me, wink wink. I mean actually just like, oh, you're new, who are you? Oh, I'm Anna's friend. Oh, cool. Wait, she had a friend from out of town? And it was just like... How well do you know? And it went on from there. It was nice. I liked it. It was super fun.
I'm going to digress out of Canada for just a quick moment because I wanted to mention the LGBT monument in Warsaw. There has been a recent Pride parade there was a Pride parade in Ukraine that had five bomb threats.
Oh dear.
All of which were just false alarms.
Oh dear.
Just to like divert and cancel a Pride parade. And they marched anyway.
Yeah.
So that's, you know...
Poland has a long history of oppression and then pulling through anyway. Like, if you look at the history of Poland, like, they are resilient. But this is a brilliant idea.
So, Poland, they had a Pride sort of monument, which kept getting vandalized and defaced.
Yeah.
But, of course, the symbol of the Pride community is a rainbow.
Yeah.
Where do rainbows happen?
In the sky, in the clouds, when water droplets fall in the sky, and then the sun goes through, and then they get differentially split according to their wavelength.
That's a very specific answer. So what they did was they just put some lights on a fountain.
Yeah.
And there's a rainbow in the water.
Yeah. So
and they've called it the unbreakable LGBT monument because it's literally...
Yeah.
Just the rainbow.
So you can damage the fountain and you can damage the light projector, but you can't write words over it.
You can't graffiti
a rainbow.
Like
water.
An actual bona fide rainbow.
Somebody could try.
Maybe you could like project also onto it, but that's an awful lot of hassle. You know what I mean?
I mean, it would be impressive. It'd be one of those things like...
I mean, that's some dedication to a hate crime right there. Yeah. We want to talk about... Well, I want to talk about... Toronto Pride next.
Right.
And I don't know if you were aware of their licensing drinks on the parade area.
I agree with the spirit of it. But the that wasn't on purpose. But the details are poorly thought out. How is that for an assessment?
That's a very good assessment. Yeah, no, it's...
So historically... In Canada in general, but Ontario specific, because I know a little bit more about the history of Ontario. Drinking alcohol out of open containers in public was meant, it was sort of part of prohibition, which never really came to Ontario, but it was meant to basically prevent public intoxication and just basically like bar brawl spilling out into the streets or bar brawl starting in the streets because people drinking beers around everywhere. The idea was never to prevent you from going to a public park and having a bottle of wine. It was never meant to, you know, stop somebody sitting on their front porch with a beer. So a lot of this, like, as a result of the push of slowly dismantling the LCBO, and if you're not in Ontario, then you should know the LCBO is basically like Ontario's liquor monopoly, which I'm...
It's the Liquor Control Board of Ontario.
Yeah, but they don't just control it. They also are the only legal purveyors...
Of spirits.
Of spirits, yes. Yeah. And
it's a crown corporation of the province of Ontario.
Yeah, I'm on the fence about whether or not that's appropriate. I don't like federally funded monopolies.
It was provincial. Yeah, I worked for the Christmas time at the LCBO as just like a temp thing, and I had to swear allegiance to the Queen because you're civil servants.
Yeah,
which I was like, I'm selling whiskey. Like, who knew that? You know, some cheap port and a couple of beers makes you a civil servant. But there you go.
Did you show up on the day off and go like, gotcha beat, sucker, I'm British. Like, no or no? Okay.
It did occur to me.
Anyway, so yeah, the province, various aspects of the province are looking at bringing back legal open containers of alcohol in public. And Toronto Pride is sort of the flagship experiment of what it would look like to bring it back, and they're just gonna like rope off an area and say if you have a wristband then you can drink. But then like there's last time we spoke actually you brought up a whole bunch of stuff which was like I had an inkling but you phrased it much better than I did. What if you're just going home? What if you live in the Church Street area and you've got groceries and among your groceries there is a bottle of wine? Do you have to pay the $10 to get a wristband to just pass through? And you also have to like check a backpack. What if you're a student and you're just on your way home?
So the footprint, I'm using air quotes here, but you can't see it because it's radio. The footprint of this project.
And then you did it again.
From, I know, I keep doing it. It's from Isabella to Wood.
Okay.
So do you know where the village is?
It is much more within that.
It's like pretty much Wellesley to Wood. Like, so their footprint area where they're licensing this outdoor space is the village.
Okay.
Where, I mean, I know it's hard to believe, but some people actually live there.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, that's where they live.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, their homes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they get dressed.
Yeah.
They go to work.
Yeah.
They open the door.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in the village.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not only that, but, like, two blocks south of the bottom of the village is like the northern end of the student residences.
Yeah.
So of
Ryerson.
Ryerson, right. And there's a bunch of like the cheapest grocery store in the neighborhood is on the other side of the village.
Yes. It's so, I mean, their footprint, I'm doing the air quotes again. Yeah, footprint is like a whole whack of massive apartment buildings. And here's what you cannot do.
Okay.
Right. Access to the event is prohibited, the event being that massive chunk of space.
The street. Okay.
Is prohibited for use of foul language.
What?
Which, at a pride parade,
That is impossible.
I know.
Are they going to ban drag queens? Because, banning the use of foul language is practically transphobic.
Under the influence of illegal drugs or other substances. Oh. So if you're just...
Oh my god, that's not going to
work. If you're just high... On your way home, for whatever reason.
And marijuana is not legal until January.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, anyone who smokes pot that lives in that part of that street can't go home. Like, it's just...
What if you have a medical exception? Like, do you have to pull out your card? Like, oh.
You can't distribute flyers.
Okay.
If anybody really does that often, but there we go.
But wait, the bars distribute flyers to their events. That's okay. That undermines pride.
So then there's things that you can't have.
Okay.
So you just finished your classes at Ryerson. You're going back to your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure you don't bring any glass. any paint, no paint. So if you work as a painter and live in the area, tough luck.
Or an artist.
You know, any chairs. Can't take any chairs in and out of your apartment.
Laser pointers?
Umbrellas. No umbrellas.
Why are laser pointers? Large backpacks. What is the cutoff point? Are they going to give us volumes?
Bicycles. So you cannot cycle in and out of the village. If you live there. Just no dice.
Well, I mean, it's a crowd. It would be improper, but like, what if you're walking it? Sports equipment? What if you're on your way home from hockey practice?
I mean,
Wellesley Station is
weapons. I can understand, but like,
well, I mean, what counts as a weapon? Hammocks. You're not allowed to bring hammocks
or generators because everyone's just hauling generators around. But it's the point we're making here is this list is actually it's pretty standard formula.
Chinese lanterns.
I know it's ridiculous. It's pretty standard formula for closed concert events. So if you're going to a jazz festival or a big music festival, these are the kind of things that you can't take on site.
Drones are unmanned aerial vehicles.
But people's issues with this is that this isn't a closed festival on a park.
It's a living neighborhood.
This is the actual street. Yeah. This is the street.
If this was Queens Park, if they had cut off Queens Park, that's not a living neighborhood. That's a park. No. Yeah.
So if you have medication that you need to have on you, you know, then someone stops you because you're in the area.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you have a conversation about the fact that you're on, you know, maybe there's codeine or stronger things in your medication for legitimate reasons?
I have a couple medications that are controlled substances.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's that conversation. Maybe you have a disability and you just need to carry a chair with you if you're going for long walks.
Camera tripods.
It's just
how did
maybe you're a photographer and live in the apartment buildings and you can't like it's just ridiculous.
Pride spends a lot of money on photographers. Like how did they allow this? Oh, I'm writing a strongly worded letter to the local representative. And so should you.
I mean, the re-entry rules are on wristbands. So the way it works is you pay to get a wristband.
Okay.
And the way it works is you can come in and out of the area, the footprint, I'm air quoting again, the footprint, without a wristband. But you cannot drink alcohol without a wristband. So if you have any water bottles on you or bottles of any other type, maybe like I said, you're a student coming home from Ryerson sipping on a Gatorade, well, good luck, make sure you don't get stopped by security. Because, and this is actually where people have had issues, Pride on their Facebook have said multiple times, and they may have updated it since, we haven't seen an updated version, but from what we've seen, Pride has said multiple times on their Facebook, you know, our added security, and that's a whole other thing I'm going to get to in just a minute, our added security will only be, you know, searching people with wristbands who are, you know, drinking and so on and so forth, and, you know, by buying into it, you're buying into the rules. Except that's not what the rules say.
Yeah, no, because I remember when I used to live in Toronto, I went to Pride a couple times. I had a bottle of, one bottle of iced tea, with air quotes, and one bottle of orange juice, with air quotes, with, you know, various things in there. Gin, with air quotes. But, like, let's say I went to Pride and I was just concerned about hydration and I brought a water bottle with me. And then they take that off of me because it may well be vodka? That's a health hazard. Because it's in the high heat of July and they're not allowing water bottles. Mind you, if they got over that by just hosing down the audience and just, you know, you wait, you know, 30 seconds, turn your head and open your mouth. I mean, that could be a solution, but...
I mean, there's so many issues with it. So in the sort of terms and conditions, the people were like, you know, you keep saying it that you won't be applying this to people who don't have the wristbands. But it does not say that. It says that, you know, security will stop anybody.
I mean, if that's the case, then don't pay for the wristband. Show up. Don't pay the $10 and have plastic things of orange juice and iced tea, quotation marks, and be like, yeah, no, I'm not drinking, whatever, I'm just bringing...
Oh, more importantly, I'm not buying into your event. Yeah. I'm just passing through.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it's an impossible situation, but people are very unimpressed with it.
Yeah.
Families are turning away because they believe that this is literally encouraging excessive drinking in the street, which it will. People are complaining that there's even a $10 charge because the bars are going to make big money on this.
They're
going to
make mint, yeah.
So why is Toronto covering the cost from this $10 per person charge and not through that? Because so many people will be passing through and will presumably buy into this. So there's so many questions.
Yeah.
They haven't released how much the infrastructure is costing to make this happen, which is what they're using as the reason for the charge.
And normally I would not say, I'd say that is a slippery slope fallacy to say that, you know, once you let drinking on the street, it's going to encourage heavy drinking. The thing is, because there are plenty of places in the world, mostly overseas, where public drinking is common. It is a common occurrence. It's associated with Oktoberfest, you know, most of the Matsuri in Japan. There's a lot of events in China where drinking beer openly on the streets is common, but they have a history of it and they have a cultural package associated with it so that people don't go bananas. This is new. People are going to go bananas this year. There's going to be a lot of vomit in the streets, is what I'm saying. Maybe in 20 years it'll be no problem, but this year, no, it's going
to
be a bad...
Further to that, the LGBT community has a disproportionate rate of alcoholism.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of folks trying to do recovery. It's really not recovery friendly when the entire village is a licensed area.
And our culture in general encourages... binge drinking in general. We do not have a culture where I'll just have one drink and then people say, oh, okay. Normally what happens is you say, I'll just have one drink, and then people keep putting new ones in your hand.
Yeah.
Luke.
That's not my fault. anyway, I was quite entertained that there is a Rest in Peace Pride Toronto event happening during Pride as well, and there's about 23 people going to that, so it should be quite the shindig. And people are just very unimpressed.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying, why was this decision made without community engagement?
I think it's the kind of thing that could be done well. It's just this is not doing it well.
There was an awful lot of stories that we've not got to, such as the World Health Organization no longer classes being transgender as a mental illness.
Oh, good.
So that's quite neat. And tons of other great news, but we will hopefully get to them next week.
That's
apparently,
one of those
ranting about Pride Toronto kept us pretty busy. So I want to play out with Do Whatever the Heck You Want, which is a new track by Ray Spoon. Ray Spoon has a new album coming out soon.
Oh, good. I'm
very excited about that. You can pre-order it now off their Bandcamp.
I like that artwork.
And pre-order the CD. Ray Spoon is the best artwork I find. Pretty good.
It's got this kind of really cool, like
nautical theme.
Yeah.
I would have that as a wallpaper in the bathroom. Yeah.
Would you?
Anyway, I would.
Well, yeah, your bathroom's pretty ugly. I think most things could help it.
This is true.
Yeah.
Different bathroom would help as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all we got time for tonight. Let us know what you think. Should there be drinking in the streets at Pride? Is it a good idea? Is it not a great idea? Let us know at TalkCanQueer. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. And we'd love to chat with you about this. But that's all we have time for. I've been Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Should I be a man or a woman? What does that really mean? Should I be outside of it or something in between? Do whatever the heck you want. Do whatever the heck you want. Don't tell anyone what the heck to do. Do whatever the heck you want. Should I be an artist? After I turn 40. what the heck to do. Hurting other people is not part of the deal. Just say.